Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlossophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlossophers, a show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Deadlights Williams.
Wah!
Boy, what was that?
That's
the
sound.
Trying to break our system and we haven't even started.
That's the sound he makes whenever he laughs.
Who is he?
Pennywise.
Pennywise. We are talking about the 1990 TV miniseries It. We are going back in time, checking this movie out, and I don't think Spence has seen it prior to, so it's going to be an interesting conversation. So stick around as we dive into that. But before we do, Spencer, you know what to do.
The Filmlossophers stay in waiting in the storm drains by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios. Don't you want a balloon?
No, not from you. Not like that.
New episodes debut each Wednesday morning, and they all float. Head on over and download the latest episode on your favorite streaming platforms such as Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, on Audioboom, and you'll float too. Beep, beep, Filmlossa fans. Connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlossophers and on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlossophers101. Filmlossophy 101. Beep, beep. Finally, look into our deadlights and see the very thing that you desire most. To check out our entire list of episodes available at filmlossophers.com. Don't you want it? Don't you want it?
Oh my gosh. Okay, take it
hey,
easy.
Hey, that's the emphasis is written in the script.
I'm going to have to start rethinking how I write this stuff here.
Hey, if you put it in caps, it will be shouted.
Okay, okay. I will know that for next time. I'm sorry, and we're going to have a great show.
Great show!
Like Spence said, check out our website where we've got all over 176 different episodes where you can check out, including last week's episode where we talked about Dora. Talking about horror movies. But speaking about horrific things, we are talking about 1990s TV miniseries It. Now, Spence has never seen it before, and so I forced him to sit in front of the TV.
Okay, but I'm vaguely aware of it.
Everybody's vaguely aware of everything, but it doesn't mean you actually ever seen it. So I sat him in front of the TV, and we actually watched the entire thing on a Saturday afternoon. And needless to say, it was interesting. If you haven't seen any of that, we are going to post the highlights of that on our Instagram page at instagram.com/philosophy101. So before we get into that, Spencer, give him that official synopsis goodness.
In a small town, a group of children are terrorized in their youth by an evil force. 30 years later, when they learn of a series of new child murderers, they return to see if they can stop it once and for all. Adults now with success in diverse careers, they still must come to terms with their past and the evil that stalks them in their New England hometown, as well as their own fears and nightmares.
Wow, good timing. Mm-hmm. A TV miniseries directed by Tommy Lee Wallace and adapted by Lawrence D. Cohen from the Stephen King novel of the same name, it features an ensemble cast starring Richard Thomas, John Ritter, Annette O'Toole, Harry Anderson, Dennis Christopher, Tim Reed, and Richard Masur as the seven members of the Losers Club, as well as the incredible, just outstanding performance by Tim Curry as Pennywise.
He's so
the
great.
Clown. Based on one of Stephen King's best-selling novels, this TV series actually paved the way for TV movies and miniseries in the future to push the envelope far more than ever before. There was a lot that happened in this particular miniseries that really was unprecedented at the time for TV movies.
Child murders.
Disembodied heads, blood, a lot of excess blood.
Excess blood?
Do you not remember? Like, there's literally blood coming out of the sink. There's blood coming out of books. There's
I guess.
Not to mention, in all honesty, no. In all honesty, you were the one who had pointed out, like, there were words that were said that weren't really used. People weren't really used to hearing them on regular TV.
Oh, yeah.
And mind you,
but you know, they censored some of that.
No, they didn't.
They would have had to, Eddie.
No, I'm not lying.
No, there is no way I'm getting on this train of, like, it was uncensored as
it
that was.
It was uncensored.
No.
Yep. on the DVD commentary track, the actors note that Tim Curry's characterization of Pennywise was so creepy and realistic that everyone avoided him during the filming. Which is odd, because oddly similar to the way Bill Skarsgård did his performance.
But, like, Bill Skarsgård in that whole getup, I could get that, because he is terrifying. Like... No, I would never.
Bill Skarsgård by himself is just terrifying. Like, did you know, little side piece of information, did you know that Bill Skarsgård could actually do the thing that he was doing in the movies with his eye, where he could make one eye turn to the left while the other one face forward? He could literally do that.
I am unhappy with this information.
That man is weird. Fun fact also about this film. Alice Cooper was actually considered for the role of Pennywise.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, which in certain aspects, it kind of made sense. I mean, you not Alice Cooper now. Don't think Alice Cooper and think like, oh, he's too old. No. Alice Cooper back in 1990 when he was at the height of his, you know, fame for Alice in Chains and rock music. Mm-hmm. You do know Alice Cooper used to sing rock music, right?
Yes, I'm vaguely aware of this.
Is that what you're Googling right now?
I'm Googling a lot of things.
This movie, so talking about this movie, it's interesting that we finally get a chance to come around to this because of the fact that we are right on the cusp of the new film, the sequel actually to the remake in 2017 that was made, It Chapter 2. It is actually debuting in a few weeks, and we are actually on the list for a press screening to check it out here in our town. So we're excited about that. But to kind of prepare ourselves for the movie, and especially to prepare Spencer, I wanted us to revisit this film that had kind of started it all. This, and it's weird because I get so caught up in calling it a film, but it's honestly a TV miniseries. That's what it's called. It's a TV miniseries. Oh, it's like 3 hours and something minutes. I don't know. I'm pretty sure you could probably find it. But, like, this was the movie that kind of started it all. Three hours and 12 minutes. Where a lot of people honestly began to have a fear of clowns and, you know, starting to fear, like, the storm drains and that opening sequence where you have Georgie getting, yeah, pretty much his arms mangled off. It's insane. And oddly enough, the newer film from 2017 gets a lot of the story elements a little bit more correct than the 1990 movie. But you cannot replicate Tim Curry as that freaking clown. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just unprecedented. It was like lightning in a bottle.
I know. He was really good in this role. especially when, like... I forget which, I'm really bad with people's names, but when he was in the library just making jokes, just sitting up there and just irritating the kid, and no one else could hear it but him, like, that was pretty funny.
Yeah, that was with Harry Anderson, where he's just going off, he's telling jokes while the guy's trying to explain to him that he'll come back later and he'll see Mike, and
yeah,
it was a lot. But I mean, if you think about it, like, that whole movie is hinged on how well the clown is portrayed.
Mm-hmm.
You take a look at any film after the fact. After that, every film that had a clown in it, whether if it was a horror movie or not, if it had a clown, it was always compared to Pennywise, Tim Curry's performance. And I can honestly say I am utterly thankful beyond belief that they did not create the 2017 remake with the idea of replicating the Tim Curry performance.
It wouldn't have worked.
In mind. No, it would not have worked at all, because you can't replicate Tim Curry. Mm-hmm. Like, Tim Curry is just this iconic, you know, legend from the early 90s, throughout the 90s. I mean, literally just in film altogether. I mean,
Yeah.
The man's just powerful. And even some of his voice acting work. I mean, I don't know if we've talked about it on here, but you and I have talked about it off air about like his role in Peter Pan and the Neverland Pirates, where he plays Captain Hook. He was the voice of Captain Hook in the cartoon.
Wow.
He was also the voice of a character in the miniseries, the TV miniseries on Cartoon Network called Over the Garden Wall.
Okay.
He was a character in there as well.
I also know he was like that pollution cloud from Fern Gully.
He was. He was the pollution cloud. That's true. Mother's milk. That's the only part I remember when he's sucking on the exhaust as a gloopy thingy. But, you know, Tim Curry is so iconic and just so enigmatic as a performer, as a character, as a voice actor, as just a person altogether. I mean, honestly, he's so unique that anybody trying to do what he did in this film would have made the movie crash and burn. Mm-hmm. Because that would have honestly been the first thing people would have said. Like, oh, I don't... He's no Tim Curry. He's not gonna, you know... Bill Skarsgård did probably the best thing he could and create his own type of Pennywise, which is essentially mm-hmm. removing all the hilarious parts of Tim Curry and amplifying like the creep factor by like another 10, 20, 100 times.
Yeah, which was a good choice for him because it really works. Because out of the two versions of the clown, I'm more scared of Bill Skarsgård's Pennywise.
So here's the thing. So, Spence, you've seen the first film from 2017.
Yes.
Okay. So, seeing the first film, what was your biggest expectation? Like, okay, let's take a step back. What is your history with this particular film? Because I know one of the things that you keep saying is that you are familiar. You're familiar. You're familiar.
Yeah.
So, what were you familiar with prior to the movie? Like, what parts were you just, you know, knowledgeable about when it came to this particular film, the 1990 film?
Really, it comes down to two things. Like, I knew the general overall story of the movie. Like, that didn't surprise me, like, watching it, actually, uh-huh. with you. The other thing I was probably familiar with where I'm seeing, like, clips on YouTube was just Tim Curry's performance. Because, uh-huh. like, there'd just be clips of just what he was doing throughout the movie. And it was pretty great.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
And uniquely enough, like, almost, like, I don't know if you know this, but Tim Curry almost didn't do the film. He almost didn't take the role.
Hmm.
The problem was he had just finished doing Legend with, I almost said John Travolta, Tom Cruise. I don't know if you've ever seen Legend, but he is this ginormous demon devil thing. And in order for him to do that particular role, he had to be in like so much makeup that it's ridiculous. And so one of the things that he told the filmmakers for this movie is that he said, I don't want to do this role because I don't want to spend more time in makeup and heavy makeup.
Hmm.
And so that was part of the agreement that if he didn't have to be in such heavy makeup, that he could actually, you know, breathe and not do the role, then he would be fine with it.
Huh.
However, thankfully to all of his like emotions and his emoting and his acting, he actually didn't have to worry about it too much because he, you know, a lot of his facial features were natural. A lot of things that you saw him do in the movie, that was all him.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't need any extra pieces here or there. He didn't need, you know, anything to make him look.
No, it was just mostly some eye and mouth prosthetics and occasional claymation. And that was it. So he was pretty solid in that movie.
He was. And it's so interesting to see, like, how if you look at, like, this is him in Legend. Like, he literally had all this, not to mention he had huge horns. If you're unfamiliar with the image, we'll see if we can throw it on our Twitter page later tomorrow or something. But like, this picture, this is him in like all his glory.
Yeah, I could see why he might not want to go through that again.
No, 100%. Like, I wouldn't.
That's detail.
That's too much detail. And, like, all the makeup, apparently he had spent hours under, like, on the makeup chair and just.
It's not surprising.
No, so he, obviously, he didn't want to continue doing that. Like,
yeah, especially if it's something that looks on, like, the similar level of this. That would be way too much.
Like, he had eye contacts in, teeth, you know, long ears. He had prosthetic upon prosthetic upon prosthetic put on him. So he didn't want to do that again. And thankfully, Tommy Lee Wallace, the director, came to a compromise with him saying, you know, we'll go ahead and just do minimal makeup and we'll see where they go from there. Which that was a smart move, because had they have like put on prosthetic upon prosthetic for the character of the clown.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, aside from the parts where he actually has to turn into a darn monster, like, it made sense.
Right.
You want this thing that looks so commonplace where it's not going to stick out if, say, someone else sees it at the same time as, you know, the kids do or someone else does. You know, no one's going to raise an alarm. So, little piece of added information there. But, so, going back to you, Spencer... What were, obviously, aside from the 2017 movie, what were some of the things that you were expecting coming into this movie? And keep in mind, obviously, yes, it was a movie that done in the 1990s, actually in 1990s, so you had the 80s era kind of coming to an end. You had a lot of, like, the whole acid wash jean look and neon colors coming into the early 90s, into the mid-90s. Keeping all that in mind, obviously, and you guys just heard the music. Yes, the music is very indicative of the time period as well. What were some of the things that you were expecting going into this?
Really not terribly much, because since I seen like the 2017 movie, I had just a pretty good idea of what they were going to do as kids. And they, for the most part, did that. But really, I guess the thing I was most interested in is just seeing like more of Tim Curry in throughout the whole movie and just getting all the clips I have seen in context of what was actually happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So pretty much having something that puts all the pieces together so you can see what it fully looks like through and through.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Like, had you had seen, because you said you saw some clips of like Tim Curry's performance and whatnot, not to mention. I mean, there's a ton of memes out there with Tim Curry's face, and there's, you know, and then obviously with the popularity, you know, rising again because of the 2017 remake.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously what we're watching this for is in preparation of the sequel to that
Chapter 2
coming out. What were some of the things that you were most looking forward to with this film? Like, what were some of the things you were kind of hoping to fully realize and see in this film?
I guess the only hope was for maybe a better understanding of what was happening.
I'd say that.
Because I suppose the thing I have the hardest time with in both versions of this is just the psychic children's network that we have here.
The psychic
children's. Yeah, I guess I just don't fully get it.
Oh, my gosh.
But, like, I heard something about, like, it has something to do with giant turtles that carry the universe on its back or something.
I mean,
but that's not discussed at all in the movie.
No, which in our, I gotta pull this up. yes and no. I mean, obviously there are certain parts of the book that can't really translate roughly enough due to like, everything.
Yeah, and there's certain things that probably shouldn't be translated as well.
Yeah, that's also a very true statement. But we did an episode not too long ago on what was that called? The Dark Tower?
Yes.
And we talked about
one on that.
Yeah, we did one on there on The Dark Tower way back when. And in that film, it very much was an opportunity to kind of discuss the what we called the Stephen Kingdom universe, if you will, because of the fact that that film kind of the story itself, the whole Dark Tower series really connects the entire universe that everybody has always speculated about Stephen King. Mm-hmm. Everybody had always said, like, oh, well, yeah, maybe they are connected, or maybe there is something there. Maybe there's... No, this series, this book series, which started back in the early 80s, actually confirms that, yeah, all of his books are linked. Everybody has a connection. And Lesson 75, The Dark Tower. Now, unfortunately, the movie was horrible. But
yeah, it's real unfortunate because then they would have had right there another cinematic universe just ready to rise up.
Which, mind you, in The Dark Tower, like, there are things that allude to what it really is. What is the entity that's behind it? Who is controlling that entity? You know, what are some of the other things that are out there? What is the psychic connection that connects all these people? And we're going to have to do an episode. We're just going to have to do an episode on the Stephen Kingdom universe, because
I don't know anything about Stephen King.
Well, we're going to hit the books, big boy, because we're going to learn.
This is the film philosophers, not the book philosophers.
You know what? How dare you? But no, I mean, like, understanding that whole aspect really sheds light on when you see things like this, where it's like, okay, well, that's cool. There's a killer clown on the loose, but why do I care as to whether or not that connects to, say, a movie like The Shining, or a movie like Cujo, or a movie like Pet Sematary, or a movie, say, like, I don't know, Rose Red, or the movie coming up called Doctor Sleep.
Doctor Sleep.
I mean, a lot of the Stephen King movies that are out here, even like movies like Silver Bullet, which nobody really knows about, but it's like, it's a movie out there with crazy Gary Busey. That has a connection.
That sold me on that movie.
That has a connection to it. Movies like Christine about the killer car, or Duel about the killer, you know, truck driver who's trying to ram this guy off the road.
What about Maximum Overdrive with the killer cars or just machinery?
Oh my gosh. Even movies like Dreamcatcher, which really didn't do that well, because have you seen Morgan Freeman's eyebrows in that movie?
No. Is that the movie where someone got killed on a toilet?
There was a lot of people who got killed. But this movie, I swear. Are you ready for this?
Okay, let's do this.
He's got them who eyebrows. That's Morgan Freeman there, buddy.
That looks like he's from some sort of Dr. Seuss movie.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. Like, seeing those eyebrows. Look at that. Look at that. Look at them bad boys. You can
what
fly.
What was wrong with his eyebrows?
That's just the way he was.
Why?
I don't know. I don't know.
Like, were those the dream catcher in that movie?
His eyebrows?
Yes. No.
But, like, all these movies, even movies that, you know, you may not even consider, like Stand By Me or The Shawshank Redemption or even Misery, those are all movies that are, like, oddly enough, tied to his overall universe. Did you know Green Mile? Green Mile is one of those movies.
I have questions about how certain movies possibly tie in.
Like, which ones?
Like, Stand By Me. Like, how does that tie in?
Because the four boys have this connection together. And that connection is
part, friendship.
No, it's called The Shining. Well, so
what?
So in the movie The Shining, it kind of establishes that the entire Stephen Kingdom universe is connected by this force that is very particular in certain individuals, which is why Danny Torrance in The Shining is able to see ghosts, and the ghosts want Danny because he's a good conduit, if you will, of them coming into this world. Movies like The Green Mile, great example, with John Coffey having those powers. He was one of those ones who was part of The Shining. The kids from, bringing it back over here, the kids from It, who have that ability to, like, feel and connect with each other and have that ability to overcome the evil in that movie, they have The Shining. Hmm. Now, mind you, I don't remember what it's actually called in the Dark Tower series. I don't think it's called The Shining, but it's called, there's a specific name that they give it in the book series. I haven't read it in a little while, but, like, the ability to connect to each other more so. Did you know that The Running Man is a Stephen King novella?
I did not.
It is a short story from Stephen King.
Wait, so now Arnold Schwarzenegger might have The Shining or
he
something?
He might have The Shining.
I don't think I want to be a part of this universe. That's a bridge
okay,
too
Professor
far right
Farnsburg,
there.
Farnsworth. I don't want to live on this planet anymore. But bringing it back to it.
So relatable.
Bringing it back. The thing with it is, like, this was one of the movies that I remember growing up and seeing. Like, I actually remember when the miniseries was coming out on TV, and, like, we literally, my family got popcorn, and we sat down and watched it. Like, I remember this. And not to mention, I feel old. But, like, not to mention, like, even when it was reprised back on, like, TV afterwards, and people were watching it, and it was cool. Like, at the time, it was a part of my childhood, seeing this movie. Coming to it now, it's like one of those old faithful type things. Like, if I ever just want to sit down and veg out in front of a movie, I'll put it on. Because it's 3 hours and somewhat minutes of, like, enjoyable fun for me. Because you have Tim Curry, you have all these great actors, the great kid actors. It was perfect. Not to mention, when's the next time you're going to see John Ritter in anything? You know, God rest his soul, poor guy. But, like, John Ritter is great in it. You know, you got Richard Thomas, who after doing It, decided he needed to step away from that and did a show on PAX TV called It's a Miracle. You know, it's a miracle he had a career after that. You know, but a lot of that, like, you recognize a lot of people, like Annette O'Toole. Annette O'Toole, mm-hmm. After this, what did she do?
Smallville.
She was the mother on Smallville. Harry Anderson, great comedian, had his own TV show. A lot of these people you recognize and you see their career after the fact. But, like, this movie started so many things off. Like, one of the greatest things that this movie gave us was an opportunity to have access to a horror film that could be viewed by a general audience. Because if you think about it, yes, there are a lot of horror elements in this movie. But it was on TV. It was in a made-for-TV miniseries, which meant there were people who were like, let the kids watch it. They'll learn, you know, and then just like...
But learn what? Not to go talk to clowns in a storm drain?
Not to go stick their hands down a storm drain.
I really feel like that should have been part of the lessons beforehand.
When was the last time you were told that? I see.
But yeah. I never did that.
How do you know?
Because I'm still alive.
What? What does that even... Okay, so, like... but, like, this was one of those movies that you could actually... I know, I keep pushing the whole agenda of, like, there are certain horror movies that you could watch with a family. We kind of made a mention of that in one of the last episodes we did in Lesson 175, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
I thought you were going to say Dora.
You all really right. Want this episode to end here,
no,
huh, don't
no,
you?
No, no, I mean, we're fine.
But this was one of those movies. It's like, because it was done in the 90s and a lot of the acting and whatnot, it is kind of hokey. It is very 90s-ish. Like, you have the typical, like, contemplative look of the kid where he puts his hand on his face like, oh, you know, and he's like, you know, fawning off like into the distance, his eyes gazing, you know, in nowhere land as the scene kind of dissolves out. Like, yeah, that was typical, but it was a good movie. I don't know. Would you have seen it as a kid, Spence?
No.
Which, there you go. That just wiped everything I said in the last 10 minutes. Go ahead.
No, my mom wouldn't let me watch.
Why not?
Because she doesn't want to give me nightmares.
Who got nightmares? Did you get nightmares as a kid?
As a kid, sometimes, but not bad.
Sheltered children. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay.
I'm just kidding.
Whatever.
So, I'm gonna
tell
obviously,
my mom on you.
Oh my gosh! Did you really just threaten me with telling your mom on me? Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. So, like, obviously, we're gonna talk about spoilers. This movie has been out for like 29 years. You've had 29 years. If you haven't seen it, by all means. However, I do want to mention this. This conversation is going to have bits and pieces that may or may not be visible in the sequel.
True. Very true.
And mind you, we're not going to go into all this great detail about every single part of the film. You can check it out yourself. But I do want to hit on a couple pieces that like really exemplified what this movie did altogether for the time, what it does different than the 2017 film, and what we're hoping to either see in the 2019 sequel or possibly not see, you know, like giant bugs and stuff like that. Like there's a lot to kind of dig into.
I don't even know what they're going to do in certain aspects.
I have no idea. But like one of the things that I really want to kind of exemplify, Lark, just talk about is the difference in like how the kids were portrayed in the new one as opposed to like how the kids were portrayed in the old one. Is it just me or have child actors have become like little adults?
Yeah, no, child actors are now legitimate actors.
It's
themselves.
Insane. Like we went to go see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Not too long ago, which was episode 172. We saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and that little girl in that film, she's a grown little woman.
If you told me she had like that disease where she looks like a child, but she's actually 48, I'd be like, of course, that makes so
that
much
makes
more
perfect
sense.
This little woman is just really short. No, but she's like, she's phenomenal, and she's very mature in terms of how she acts. Kids back in the days were just like, oh, yeah, we're friends, and we'll be friends to the end, won't we, Eddie?
I think it's because, like, probably adults around them didn't be like, ah, they're kids, they can't do any better than that.
It's weird, though.
Or
like
something.
I know it was a made-for-TV movie, but, like, come on, don't skimp on the kids. I mean, don't. No, like, like there were, I mean, mind you, not every single one of them was very generic. Like
no, but the Ben kid.
I was just gonna say
he had some faces that are just like, what?
Yeah, yeah, he was good. Him, Seth Green.
Young.
We got a baby Seth Green in this one. Did I even mention that? Oh, we didn't even put that. Baby Seth Green is in this film.
Yeah. He's great.
He is. You have a whole slew of good actors. Even. The little girl who plays little Beverly, Emily Perkins, she was good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the film really does a good job at showcasing the ones that really knew how to shine. But sadly, like, that's kind of where I draw the difference between this film and Stand By Me. Stand By Me was a force to be reckoned with when it came to kid actors. You had like Corey Feldman.
Mm-hmm.
You had what's his name?
Will Wheaton.
You had Will Wheaton.
Jerry O'Connell, I believe.
Jerry O'Connell, that's right.
Yeah. That one was a favorite of mine.
Oh, and then of course, how could I forget River Phoenix?
Oh yeah,
Joaquin Phoenix's brother. You know, and they're all like incredible. Those kids were like little adults. So you look at when Stand By Me was, which was in 1986, excuse me, and you look at this movie, which was in 1990, I don't know if it was like a budget thing or if like they just decided on the group of kids that they had in this one, but it's like, you know, why kind of skimp out? Like, yes, Jonathan Brandis was a decent, you know, actor,
mm-hmm.
but you know, I don't think he was the linchpin that pulled this entire film together. Like not like in the 2017's remake with that Bill, because Jonathan Brandis played Bill.
Right.
In the 2017 one, Bill is like, seriously, Jaden Martell, great, like really great.
Yeah, pretty much all the kids like in the 2017 version were just knocking it out of the park.
Yeah. And mind you, it's not. I'm not trying to hate on the film. I'm not trying to be negative. I'm just saying, like, if you're looking at comparisons, there were some lacking parts on the kid's end, which is odd because the director thought that the first half of the film was a whole lot better than the second half, with the kids and their portrayal of, like, the camaraderie that they had. Tommy Lee Wallace, director, thought, like, the kids had much more of a magnetic attitude towards each other as opposed to the adults, which I kind of disagree. I think the adults actually had a stronger, like, I felt like there was much more meat to the relationship that they all had. In my opinion, I don't know. What did you think?
I was still thinking through how I felt about that.
Because, like, it, for me, you could look at it both ways. Like, the kids, they seem more together because they were like, it's like the kids bunch. And, you know, that group of kids that are friends and, you know, this is the best summer ever, you know, kind of stuff like that. But then, I don't know, maybe as a kid or as a younger person, maybe I would say that the kids had a much more magnetic, you know, relationship with each other. But I think as I grow older and as I'm seeing, like, I feel sad saying this, but seeing as how much more I can relate now to the grown-ups.
Because we're almost at their age.
Shush.
We might have to fight a monster.
Bite your tongue. it's like, for me, I can see, yes, there's been a struggle. They've gotten to this place in their life, and they are now contemplating whether or not if it's really worth fighting again at this stage in their life, being at a place where they're like, you know what? My life is good. I'm happy. I am actually thriving. I don't need to come back to this town. I'm good. You know, and I can see that. But I don't know. What do you think? Because I really think that the director's wrong. And God help me if he listens and he's like, you know what? I'm done listening to this podcast. I don't know how old he is.
Why are you making him sound so old?
He was an older guy when the movie was directed. Who knows? Maybe he's like, I don't know. But he's like, I'm never listening to this podcast again. You know. But, like, I really think I liked the adult dynamic more so than the kid dynamic. Do you agree or disagree?
See, I kind of go both ways on it because, like, I kind of like both. Like,
listen, neutral Sally. I know you want to be the. Give it to me straight.
The only problem I had with, like, any of the groups was the adult version of Richie Tozer, because I thought he was a terrible.
He was not terrible. That was Harry Anderson. You bite your tongue.
Oh,
dude.
Oh,
he was
also,
on Night Court, and he something. Was in Dave's World. How dare you talk bad about Night Court?
Something
he was
I need
Judge
to tell
Harry
you about.
Stone in Night Court.
Okay. Actually, before seeing this movie, I totally thought it was Jeff Foxworthy.
Jeff Foxworthy? What?
I thought it was Jeff Foxworthy.
This is why we can't. No, no. No.
Oh, man.
No.
Life's funny like that.
No, it's not. Jeff Foxworthy. In a horror movie, Jeff Foxworthy can't even say a cuss word in his stand-up comedy routines. He's a clean comic.
Oh, yeah. He's unfunny, so that's why he's playing.
Oh, okay. Is that what it was? Oh, the guy wasn't funny in the movie? That must have been Jeff Foxworthy. And Harry Anderson, you know, he was a really comedic actor at the time. Like, he was known for his roles, like I said, in Night Court. He did Dave's World. He did do an episode of Tales from the Crypt. You know, he's done quite a bit in his span of, like, of his career. So the man had the ability to do stuff. Not to mention he was in Cheers. Mm. So I don't know, like, what do you do? So do you think that the kids had a better dynamic, or do you think the adults? This is not, you know, rocket science. This is not the red.
No,
wire,
but
blue
it's
wire.
A hard question, because, like, there were some really great moments with both of the groups.
So lay them out for me. What were the great moments for the kids?
Let's see. I think kind of with the kids, it was pretty much. Anytime there was, like, a scene with them out in, like, the wilderness, Like, I kind of liked all of those. And then, I don't know, just seeing the adults together and then just, like, interacting with each other for the most part, that was also pretty good. That's why I'm kind of in the middle. Like, I kind of like both groups as they are. Although I like the 2017 kids the best.
So the moments in the forest and all that kind of stuff for the kids. What about the adults? What was the shining moments for the adults?
Oh my gosh.
This is not number 24 on the math test, Spencer.
Isn't it though?
Cuz like for me, okay. So like for me, some of the shining moments for me in this movie were seeing the adults with their life that seemed to be mirroring the exact things that they were plagued with as a kid, which you can relate to now. You're like, oh man, you know, this person used to, I don't know, he used to pick on dogs and now he spends his days as a dog catcher. I don't know. Like, you what? See, like, the signs, like, you see the things, like, as a kid, you saw what was plaguing them and what was a part of their life, and you're like, they're going to swear never to get into something like that. And then they grow up, and the exact things that they were plagued by as a kid are the things that kind of motivated them or are a part of their current life right now. Like, take, for instance, you look at Ben Hanscom. He was a large kid who drove himself to get to a place where he could be healthier and skinnier and more fit. Not out of the desire to see himself get healthy, but out of the desire to prove somebody wrong. You know, finally getting to a place where he could face those demons, and that was something that is constantly his battle. You look at somebody like Richie Tozier, who spent his entire life being a cut-up and a funny guy and avoiding all the bigger things, deciding to become like a well-known comedian and, you know, kind of avoid all the things, which he spends a lot of time as an adult, avoiding the situations that need to be given attention to.
Yeah, so he mostly hasn't changed.
And then you look at somebody like Beverly Marsh, who in the book, which sadly it's not sadly, I don't want to say it like that, but it's not very well outlined in this film. But like Beverly was like abused, even sexually at times. And seeing how when she grows up, she ends up being with somebody who abuses her in a very like authoritative fashion, almost like a father figure. and you see like that's what she falls into when it comes to like her comfort. That's what is the comfort cycle, if you will, for her.
Okay, but like as a side note, a lot of the men in this movie just suck. Like just overall, top to bottom, they suck as people. And like not even like the abusive ones, just like Georgie and Bill's dad.
Okay, like, their dad, Mr. Denbor.
Yeah, like
Denboro.
Even he sucks. Like when Bill wanders into Georgie's room, he's like, "Never wander into here again."
Wow.
Like your kid's going through something, you idiot. Like you think he might just want to
got the hiccups on that one.
Like so not paying attention at all. Like that actually made me angry. I was mad.
Oh my gosh. Okay. And mind you, yes. You look at a lot of the adults that are currently in the town and they're very like ignorant. Not ignorant, but they're
like, they know what's going on.
No, exactly.
Like that old man who was watching Beverly and those like that thing going on and he just turned and walked away. No, like all these people are complicit and they like have signed up for all the bad things that are happening to them. Which they're not standing up for anything.
Which I definitely appreciate in this film. It's more simplistically told, like, yeah, bad stuff happens in this town. And it's like every 30 years and we are coming up on that mark. You know, it's expressed very well and simply, especially for a, you know, made for TV movie. But yeah, I still think, I honestly still think that the film had a better dynamic with the adults than it did with the kids. I don't know. Another, like, really great factor of this particular film is that it actually runs simultaneously like the book, we had talked about this, and you were actually asked this before we saw the film. You're like, is this how the movie is, or is this how the book is? You know, going back and forth, where it talks about like the situation in the current time, and then the flashback, and then current time, and flashback, current time. And in all actuality, that's how the book is. You know, the book is just the same. You have the situations that are happening in the current time, and it flashes back to the, you know, something that corresponds to it in the past. And then you have current time, past, current time, past, current time, past. Ultimately, until you get to the conclusion of the past situation to kind of transition and launch into the current day situation. And I think that's an interesting note to see a film take that approach, as opposed to how the current film, the 2017 film, jumps and completely jumps that whole note and just does a complete kids version first.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. What do you think about that?
I hate it. Like, I've always been, like, it's personal preference, I realize this, but I've always been the type who likes, like, reading through one story first and then hopping over to a different idea. Because there was a set of books that I used to read as a kid.
Uh-huh.
And, like, they'd always put out a special version where, like, it would toggle between, like, the kids' perspectives through the story. And that drove me crazy. Because, like, really? One kid would, like, get into a situation, and then we'd hop over to another kid, and then I would not be paying attention to what was happening to this new kid because I'm too stuck on the last kid.
Really?
Yeah. And then I'm just like trying to skip ahead, figure out where he comes back in, and then follow that storyline. I've always kind of been like that.
So you like just a straight shot narrative from beginning to end in one chronological push?
Like, I just don't like a whole yo-yoing effect of like, we're here, we're back, we're here, we're back. Like, you can hop around a little bit, but like when you keep doing that, like I get irritated sometimes.
Okay, I can see that. I think it's definitely something unique to storytelling. Like, you don't really see that often in terms of people creating this back and forth with characters and like, oh, you know, we're going to go from here and then we're going to go back in time. We're going to go back to here. We're going to go back in time. However, I think the idea was to create this parallel for the readers for the readers first and then the viewers second, you know, between how much things kind of are similar in terms of the struggle as a kid and the mm-hmm. struggle as an adult, to kind of bridge the gap in my mind to say, hey, at any age, we have these same battles. We have these similar fights. We have these things that really plague us. And is it really okay for us to say, well, as a kid, it's not really as bad, you know, until you become adult. And then it's really difficult. I think this is one of those great equalizer moments where it's like, no, like, it's all bad. Like, mm-hmm. whether or not if you're having to deal with this as a kid or as an adult, it's just all bad. Like, trauma is no fun for anybody. And I think that's a great message that I think Stephen King tries to get across for a lot of readers. And in this case, it's not so, like, discombobulating to me, at least personally. It's not so discombobulated that it's like, oh, so we're going to talk about this in the current time frame and we're trying to gather all these people. But then in the past time frame, we're actually going to go and see this random character that has nothing to do with the story, and we're going to focus on them for a little bit, and then something happens, they die, and then fast forward back to the future where everything's back to like earlier, like the previous scenes. It's not anything so confusing that you can't follow. There's a sense of parallelism to the storylines where each time, so if you haven't seen the film or if you've been living under a rock, whatever, like the story goes in it where Mike Hanlon, who's the only person who still lives in Derry, sees that there's a string of murders and he begins to call up his friends to come back and fulfill the promise that he made.
I think it's probably that sequence that is a little on the frustrating side, not because it's like confusing or anything,
uh-huh.
but more of so like he calls someone and he's like, it's Mike Hanlon. And then it zooms in on the person's face and then we switch back to the past. We're in the past for a while, then we go jump back to the present. Mm-hmm. Like, they make some comment about going to Derry. Then we switch to another person, and then he calls. It's like, it's Mike Hanlon. And then we go back to the past. And
well,
it's
because,
like,
because of the fact that whatever entity is in Derry, whatever that creature is,
uh-huh.
is actually cutting off the memories that these people have of Derry by surrounding Derry in this, like, evil force field. Like, it's keeping people from remembering anything about Derry. So all these people who made it successful and left and everything, you ever wonder why they became so successful in their endeavors while still being tied to the very things that they held onto as a kid? Every single one of them is successful.
Mm-hmm.
But do you ever wonder why they were... Did you ever see any of them, like, be... struggling and having issues, like, hard up for money? Was anybody ever, like, itching, like, man, I gotta get my itch, I gotta get my next fix? Like, nobody was, like, struggling. Everybody was doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
And you ever stop to consider maybe that was part of that entity's doing to keep them from needing to come back to Derry?
Oh, I thought that was just because of the 90s.
No, like, that's a part of it. Like, that the creature created this invisible barrier that cut off a lot of people from remembering Derry.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an interesting kind of mindset for the character to be like, he is so powerful that he even creates opportunities for people to forget about the town they were in as a kid. So it's that part of, like, the story of that creature, because that's why when they hear the name, like, Mike Hanlon, hey, you know, Bill, it's Mike Hanlon, and it, like, kind of zooms in and does all that, it's because the flood of memories are coming all at once, you know. And yes, it's a very cheesy effect, I get it. It's not the best of, like, uses of, like, zooming in with a camera, but still, the idea is still there. Like, the moment that connection is recreated, it's like a synapsis that's, like, re-remembered and firing off at the same time, which has its own set of synapses that are connected and firing all at once to help you remember this whole thing. It's like they're all firing. They're all happening all at once.
Hmm.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I guess I just thought...
He's like, I just still think it's stupid.
Well, yes. But, like, I thought mostly it was just them repressing their own memories.
No.
Because who would want to remember any of that? I know I wouldn't.
Well, it's true. Like, most of them, it's probably part of the repression, but they also made a promise to each other. And so, like, it's just interesting what happened after that. Like, I don't remember in the book, and I don't really want to reread it, but I could probably check it out. Like, what happens after they leave the sewers the first time, and where? Because I believe people move. It was just over the course of one summer. Everything that happens in the movie, for the kids, is literally just in one summer.
Hmm.
It's not over the course of, like, several summers. This is just one summer. And finally, like, obviously, those are great perspectives to have and see, you know, in terms of that way of the film and that way of the dynamic of creatures and all that so forth. Like, one of the other things, like, you have to pay attention, you have to really kind of celebrate, is the uniqueness of, as we mentioned earlier, Tim Curry. Like, I think it's such a profound thing to say when you're talking about a horror movie. You think horror movies, and there are few icons that come to mind. Obviously, you have images of people you can think of, like, oh, you think horror, you think Frankenstein, you think Dracula, you think, you know, the Mummy, you think all this and that. But, like, do you know characters and their names, the names of the people who play them? Like, maybe you know Bela Lugosi, who does, I believe it's, what's his name? I think it's Dracula. Bela Lugosi does Dracula. You got Boris Karloff, who does Frankenstein. I mean, There's just so many different individuals. Yeah, Bela Lugosi does Dracula. Boris Karloff does... the Wolfman. There's instances where you can sometimes remember individuals, but the basic essence of it all is, like, unless you're really well into that, there are very few people you can actually name, call out by name in terms of monster people. Well, you can name, like, Freddy Krueger, you know. You don't know who Freddy Krueger is.
I don't know who played Freddy Krueger.
Oh, really?
No.
Well, he was played by Robert Englund.
Oh. Yeah, I've heard that name before. I don't know it off the top of my head, but I have heard that name before. I have heard, like, all the names you're mentioning before.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, because those names sound familiar to me, but, like, I couldn't, like, if this was part of a quiz show, I would fail it because I don't know.
Oh, man. But, like, you know, Michael Myers in you know, and The Shape, you know, you have characters like Jason Voorhees. Jason Voorhees, the guy who played Jason Voorhees, has been iconic. Ted White, he's been the guy who's been doing Jason for the good part of the century. But then you get into other elements, and, like, you can't really remember a lot of people who play other horror films or other horror characters. You know, not many people know who played Pumpkinhead because he was a big giant puppet. Like, there's so many elements that are just questionable. But then you take a look at it and you're like, that's Tim Curry. Like, that is Tim Curry as Pennywise. I don't know if there's anybody more iconic in terms of horror that you can think of instantly where you can recall the name. Tim Curry is Pennywise. And in truth, I don't know if it made his career or if it, like, hindered it. I don't know, but I'm glad he did it.
Oh, yeah.
100%. Yeah. Because you have to think, like, doing made-for-TV movies, that must have been, like, a sign of, like, all right, well, start getting ready to throw in the towel, kid, because this is this is the end of the station. Like, it would almost seem like it to me.
Yeah, it kind of does have that feel.
But he is so seamless in this movie. There's no part of this film where at any point in time you feel like he's dialing back or he's, like, taking it easy or he's completely, like, subdued and not wanting to really push anymore, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Every single scene that he's in, it seems like he is at 110% completely trying to scare the living daylights out of me as a kid. And I enjoyed it, you know? What do you think?
Yeah, no, like, he's super recognizable. Like, I remember him from, like, other movies that he's been in, too. But, like, he's always a delightful part of whatever he's in.
Uh-huh.
Like, there's just something about him where you just kind of remember him. And I'm not quite sure what it is.
Oh, very true, very true. In terms of the latter half of this film. Now, obviously, there's some elements of this movie that don't get translated from the book. Thank God. And mind you, if you really need somebody to explain that to you, just go look it up. I'm pretty sure there's, like, about a million YouTube videos.
Maybe don't.
Or maybe don't. That's right. Maybe you don't need to know. It's fine.
Sometimes you don't need to know what's going on.
But certain elements of the latter half of the book are interesting in terms of, like, obviously, and like we said, if this spoils any part of the film itself, then boohoo. Like, but I don't know. Like, if you haven't seen it or heard about it, that's all on you. But, like, you know, I know for certain, like, you know for certain that, like, Stan is gonna kill himself when he finds out about having to go back to Derry. Like, that has to be in there because that is a part of, like, the introductory ammo for Pennywise when all the adults start coming back. Like, the jabs at them to, you know, lessen their ability to connect to each other. But even then, like, seeing individuals like, what's his name? Oh, what's his name? What's the bully's name?
Oh, Henry Bowers.
Henry Bowers. Yeah, like, even having Henry Bowers come back in the sequel, which in this movie, in the original 1990 movie, he still seemed like this crazy jerk. Like, in the, I have to say, I think I like the Henry Bowers in the 1990s movie more so than I liked the Henry Bowers in the 2017
movie. Why?
Because in this 2017 one, he just seemed like a disgruntled hillbilly. Like, he didn't even seem like... And maybe... Okay, maybe it's because it's in the 80s. But, like, I just... The whole mullet thing really didn't do it for me as, like, a, as like menacing, like...
You're not menacing because you have a mullet.
Yeah, oh, look at you. He's got his party up in the back all fluffled. And
oh, my God.
His business in the front, party in the back. Like, I just couldn't see that as, like, a menacing trait. Anybody who has a mullet, I laugh. And I'm more than certain I laughed at Henry Bowers in this movie. Like, Henry Bowers just seemed, in this particular movie... Mm. As more of like a psychotic threat, like he's gonna snap, and you probably know he's probably done a bunch of stuff that you don't know of, but there's still a sense of him that's like, it's okay for him to walk around this place.
No, it's not.
No. I'm saying, like, from the adult perspective, it's okay because maybe there's not everything wrong with him, but he hides it so well that when he does snap, he loses it.
Are we talking about the one from the 90s version?
Yeah.
No.
What?
He looks like he is just one minor comment away from killing somebody, which he was.
True.
He was a ticking time bomb, and everyone was just too apathetic to do anything about it.
But I like that about this one. Like, I like the ability to see that he's still... He's a part of everything around him because of the fact that everybody knows, you know, that's how whatever it is that happens every 30 years, it works through things like that. And they just let it run its course. Like, the Henry Bowers in the 2017 one, he seemed like he was just like one pill short of like a whole, you know, psychological medication tray. Like, even before, like, he just seemed like he was off. In public, I felt like...
So did the 90s version of the character.
I don't know. I really like the kid in the 90s version. I don't know. I think it might have just been the mullet. I think it's just the mullet. Okay, I'll admit it.
You are
just
stuck on the mullet.
I think the mullet has me so biased that I just can't.
Ugh, can't. Eddie. Like, because... No. That kid... No.
I don't know. I like the 90s one. Here's a kind of volley question at you. Do you think the same people that die in this movie are going to be the same people who die in the new movie?
Well, I would assume Stan has to be.
Obviously. We literally just said that.
But yeah.
Like, aside from Stan, because if you look at the list, it is Eddie dies.
Yeah. I don't... Like, watching that, unless it's in the book, but I could also see that changing. Because, like, the way he died in the movie, like, there was nothing really gained from the story by it. So I could see them just moving that around. The only reason why I'm thinking Stan can't, like, be, like, left alone is because, like, he was actually kind of, like, a pushing forward for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In my mind, you, now that I'm thinking about it, the only person who actually did die was Eddie, which is...
Well, Stan died.
No, I mean, after, obviously Stan's going to die. Like, that's a given. Stan has to die.
Eddie is the only person who died because Stan died.
Well, yes, I know Stan died, but I mean after Stan killed himself, like once they're all in Derry. But then you have the situation where Mike gets stabbed, and then you have, like, whatever they're going to, like, recreate in the underground lair of Pennywise. I'm wondering, do you think they're going to leave it at just one character, or do you think they're going to actually kill off more, or do you think they're going to do like a whole thing where I don't know. What are your thoughts on like the people who will make it and eat it?
Well, I have not read the books. So I am without all the fun, like, background information on other things that could happen in the series.
But if you were a betting man.
Well, I mean, you're going to have to kill someone.
That's a great way to put it. Well, somebody's going to have to die.
Well, I mean, because, like, I mean, it's a killer clown. You really think everyone's going to get out of that encounter alive?
You never know. I mean, hey, anything's possible.
Really, I think we'd have to look at the cast of characters, and whoever seems the least popular is probably the person who's
going to Wow. Wow. All right. Well.
That's how movies work, and you know it. Don't try to throw that all on me.
Well, wrapping this whole thing up, I honestly am really looking forward to seeing how much of this is going to be referenced or even honored, if you will, in the upcoming sequel. I really like this movie. Like, the 1990 movie is a huge shining beacon in a lot of horror fans' repertoire and even upbringing of in this genre. You know, seeing this film, I remember, you know, every time I see this movie, I get like thrown back, just like in the scenes that you don't like, when it's like, Mike, or Bill, it's Mike Hanlon. Like, that's what happens every time this movie gets put on. Like, I see it, I hear the music, and I'm like, man, it throws me back to like those days when we used to see it on the TV. Or oddly enough, it's funny because Spence didn't want to watch it digitally. I have it on one of my accounts, and I told him we could watch it that way. He's like, no, we have the DVD here. And I said, well, you know, I used to have that DVD. And so with that DVD, you have to flip it over at the midway point. Ah, we'll do it, whatever. So he gets the DVD, and he's down there on the floor trying to put it in the Xbox. And it's like,
why is this a story?
Did you put it in right? But I'm like, I remember doing that exact same thing that you did, but when I was younger, because we had the DVD. And I'm like, it's funny because I relived that moment too with you, thankfully, because of the fact that you were stubborn and didn't want to make any room.
Okay, first off, it was a whole thing to log out of my account and into yours.
Oh, boo.
I was trying to have you do it through Chromecast, and you just wouldn't. You're being your usual difficult self.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So wrapping this whole thing up, Spence, does the film pass or fail? And how many monocles would you give this movie?
Oh, this movie definitely passes. There's just really good performances in it. Questionable effects in it.
Oh, my gosh.
Come on, that spider was rough.
Speaking of things that I don't want to see, by the way, before you continue that, like, I do not want to see bugs in this movie. In the sequel.
I just assumed.
I don't want to see the bugs.
It was coming back as a German spider. Okay, so wait. We're taking a detour.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is that what it turns into in a book or no?
So it is this shapeless form that essentially...
Oh, that's already too hard to film.
No, it's a shapeless form that takes on the shape of things that give you the most fear. It actually turns into the things that you fear the most. It feeds off of it and becomes more powerful as you become more and more afraid, which is why it'll choose to become the things that you find the most terrifying, i.e. why, which I...
So it's like a boggart.
Yes, but it can do you harm in this one.
Hmm.
Which is why, like, in the first film from 2017, you have instances where it isn't just the clown, but it's the lady with the flute. Or it's like different elements that cause fear. Like the man with the leprosy who's, you know, dropping pieces of himself after chasing after little Eddie.
Ugh.
But mind you, you had a question actually earlier before we started filming or before we started recording. And you asked what were... the deadlights, really?
Yeah, I don't remember. That was a long time ago.
I was just okay. Whatever. Anyway, the deadlights are essentially this lure, if you will, to bring people into this false sense of security, and then he eats them, kills them. So that's what it is essentially.
All right, yeah, it's like it. You see the light, you're dead. Deadlights, got it.
Yeah, essentially.
Hmm.
And here's to hoping that it doesn't have. Like, the whole cosmic turtle thing, that's a whole thing that's, like, you have to really...
Cosmic turtle.
No, I'm serious. Like, that whole element has to be, that has to be more deeply explained. And that goes back to the Dark Tower series, the Dark Tower franchise, and how it's explained in there, and who the Man in Black is, and what is it? Like, is it an alien? Is it a spirit? Is it a demon? Like, it explains all that in the Dark Tower.
Okay, so I have a question.
Yeah.
Can the universe fall off the turtle's back? And if so, what happens? Like, does it just fall into a void?
Spencer.
I don't understand.
There's no. Just stop. Stop. There's no turtle in the... Stop thinking of the dang turtle! So, mind you, yes, there's a lot of elements in the book that just were really a little bit too far-fetched to be translated to the movie. Thank God not everything got translated. Although there were hints of it in the new one, the 2017 one, which was actually pretty neat. Overall, the 1991 was a very simplistic yet poignant take on this story and delivered in a format that could be delivered to anybody, which was, you know, most exemplified in the phrase made for TV. So... with that said, Spence, does the film pass or fail on how many monocles?
I already said yes to this.
Okay. Coming back. Okay, how many monocles?
I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. So help me God,
the turtle, what?
4 out of 5.
Okay, I was like,
what were you going to say about the turtle?
That turtle better not have affected your score, dang it.
This movie gets a 3 for lack of turtles. You have to explain.
No. This movie obviously passes for me. It's a childhood favorite. I have to really say that this movie is one of the more, like I said, it's one of my guilty pleasure pastime films. I could throw this on at any time and watch it through and through and just enjoy it, sit back and veg out. So, this sits at a 4.5 out of 5, not because of how masterful it is, that it isn't The Godfather meets Jason or anything. But it's definitely a film that holds a special place in my heart. And yeah, that's not going to dissuade me at all. I am looking forward to seeing what chapter two is going to bring us. And hopefully we will be bringing that episode to you next week. So stick around and stay tuned, because if that happens, God willing, we're bringing you an episode on it.
Yes.
All right. So, but that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check out all of our episodes at thefilmlosophers.com, where we have all of our previous 176 different episodes, all on different films. You can go through all of them. We have a couple of conversations, a few extra credits. Honestly, you can check out all of our stuff and listen to it. Not to mention, you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and our Twitter page at twitter.com/philosophy101, as well as our Instagram page. You can look us up at Filmlosophy101, where you can check out all of our recent highlights, where Spence is enjoying the wondrous glory of the 1990 made-for-TV movie, It Chapter 2. This was a great conversation, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what the next film has in store. And I don't know. I'm more anxious than I am concerned, because I know, yes, it's a movie and it's based on a book and everybody has their own opinions, but I honestly feel like this has already thus far created, you know, magic with me already. So I don't, you know, I'm not worried too much, which is a good thing.
Yeah, I'm not either. They did a good job the first time. I have a hard time believing they mess it up now.
Exactly. And with a stellar cast with, like, you know, why am I drawing a blank?
Yeah, Bill Hader's in it.
Bill Hader. You have the guy who played Xavier, which I can't believe I'm forgetting his name. But
James McAvoy.
James McAvoy, Jessica Chastain, all them folks. It's going to be great. We're looking forward to it. I swear we'll get all the names correct when the time comes.
Well, one of us will.
You know what? Whatever.
I was talking about you. I'm not the name person.
Anyway. This concludes our latest episode of The Filmlosophers. So, from all of us here at The Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.